welcome to a brand new episode of the internet's most hated mafia-themed geek podcast, Long Coat Mafia Podcast. It is I, the one, the only, Reverend Godfather, a.k.a. the Martinsburg Madman, a.k.a. this show's frontman and main host. Is it a main episode for the week? No. Is it our last episode for the week? More than likely not. But is this an interview episode? Yeah, kind of. Is it a deep dive? Yeah, kind of. Why? Well, this past, I should say, not this past, but last week, we got a chance to, in a way, at least virtually, sit down and speak with Matt Anderson from Key 13 Films and talk to him on various topics, including his latest campaign, Indiegogo campaign, to raise funds for his current film, Key 13 Films, plus the troubles in regards to crowdfunding, becoming an indie filmmaker, and a whole lot more. I just want to keep this short and sweet right now, so all of you can get into the interview real quick. I'm not going to put anything special, but I'm going to put that transitional spot in, and I should say transitional spot to the interview and the transitional spot on the other side, so because for the most part they act as markers for myself in years down the road, if need be. So, what more can I say? But hey, George, cue up the marker, will ya? Let's get this thing started.
We'll be right back with more of the Long Coat Mafia Podcast.
Hey everyone, it is I, the Reverend Godfather, aka the Martinsburg Madman, and we're back this week with another interview. This time, we are with
Matt Anderson of Key 13 Films.
Now, this is the first time we had Matt on our show promoting his latest GoFundMe. I think it's his latest GoFundMe. He could correct me if I'm wrong. And what he does as a independent filmmaker. So we'll get into, we'll let him talk about his latest campaign and what he's doing then in his past work. So, Matt, tell us about this new campaign that you are, that you have out there.
Okay, well, it's called These Things, and it is a welcome, or at least I think it's a welcome throwback to the 80s, kind of late 80s, early 90s, alien invasion horror comedy films like Critters, or kind of the more lower end films like Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, those kind of things. But of course, with a modern twist. It's a story you've seen a million times before. Six friends go off to a semi-remote house to party, to drink, to smoke weed, you know, do all the stuff that college kids do, and run afoul of an alien invasion of these things. And and then, you know, it's how do they, who survives, how do they survive, what happens? And of course, there are little secrets and twists all throughout.
Don't mean to interrupt you, folks. That is the name of the movie. So don't at me, don't at Matt saying, oh, you can't, don't even know the name of your own movie. You're just calling it it's the name of the movie. He ain't just forgetting the name of that particular object. It is the name of the movie. So don't worry about that. Even though, as he stated, it is a horror comedy. Just to clarify, is this a homage to those, or is it, it's going to take its own route?
It's going to take its own route. It's definitely inspired by, but not beholden to. It is its own story. We have created our own creatures, thanks to Craig Sturtz. He's our special effects master and creature designer. We're going to be doing practical effects, so it is definitely a more traditional film than modern films using CG or elements. It definitely is. You definitely will feel that it's definitely from something from the 80s and 90s, but it's very modern because there's a lot of modern things in that. If you take a look at the trailer, it pretty much shows you just a rough idea of what we're going to be doing, which is available on YouTube. It's also available on our Key 13 Films website under the Cinephoto, which is our more sort of our fun, more interesting line. Key 13 is a little bit more on the dramatic side, a little bit more on the heavier drama with themes and stuff like that. Well, Cinephoto is just a lot of fun. We have Heavy Duty Man that's going to be coming out later this year, and These Things, which we will film in July and release sometime next year.
The main reason I ask, and I'm not putting you down at all or what you're doing, is that I'd say about a year or two ago, I managed to catch David Kerr's Bloody Summer Camp. And even though it too had its own thing, I had the feeling that it was an homage to the slasher films of old. That's why I asked. So no offense to that. What for the folks at home that do see a lot of these campaigns shared on their timeline or promoted through Indiegogo or Kickstarter or sites such as that, what goes into these types of projects or these types of fundraising aspects that folks might not know?
Well, a lot of it's fundraising is a very tough needle to thread. You've got to have the right mix of earnest honesty, but you've got to have some sort of proof that you can do what you're setting out to do. You also have to look at, for me, the biggest piece is the cost versus benefit ratio. And, I know some of you folks out there, you hear that, your eyes just start rolling into the back of your head, and that's okay. Mine do too. But how do you offer things for a crowdfunding campaign that's going to get you the best bang for the buck? Because when you crowdfund, yeah, you get the money, but you also got to pay fees and taxes and a whole, other little things. So, you may give $100, but you may lose almost $10 of that just in fees and in processing and taxes and all that stuff. So you have to make sure that you try to get the biggest benefit for the reward that you offer. And then, of course, it's just it's tough trying to rise up above all the other funding campaigns out there. And there's some really great campaigns out there. And some do very, very well. They've got that thing. They've got that right mix of that they've got a proven track record, that they, maybe go out of their way to provide additional things. Dave Care does a lot of extra stuff to kind of try to keep people engaged and draw in. And that's one of the other toughest part is keeping people engaged, keeping people wanting to come back and look. Just trying to raise above the sea of all the others that are out there. And, there will be times for any campaign where you're sitting there going, why is this thing getting all the money and we can't seem to get a dollar? We can't seem to get somebody to donate just $5. We just need $5. And it's because they have a bigger network. They have a bigger reach. They have an idea that people can understand or that they can get behind, or they have really big circle of friends. There's so many different things. So when you're doing a funding campaign, you really need to research. You really need to pay attention and understand that you may not get the money that you're looking for. You know, with Kickstarter, it's an all or nothing. You either get it all or you get nothing. Indiegogo is a lot more flexible. You can keep what you get, but is what you're going to get enough to get you to what you need to do? And so, you know, trying to find that happy medium is a chore. You know, these things is going to be a combination of private funding and crowdfunding. So, you know, we're going to make the movie regardless of how much we make. But the more that we make on a crowdfunding campaign, the more we can do, the better special effects. And this Wednesday at 8 o'clock, on our Cinephoto and Key 13 Film Facebook pages, as well as all the groups that are associated with it, we're going to be doing, well, we're going to have a special announcement. We're going to show a lot of new stuff, specifically involving the creatures that Craig Sturtz has designed. So, you know, we're hoping that that's going to give us another push to get us to the, get us to our goal. But if we don't, we're still going to make the movie. And we still have, right now we have enough that we can make the movie that we want to. But we really want to make the movie even better. And the big part of that, and a lot of people may not always realize this, a good chunk of a budget, at least in my case, I'm not saying for everybody, but in my case, goes to the actors. That I'm trying to pay the actors a decent wage. That are not, I wouldn't call it a fair wage, because, you know, if we were SAG, I'd be paying, you know, a heck of a lot more. And I would love to, but, you know, I everybody is given the offer. If they agree to it, then they're, you know, that means they're good with it. Or if they're not, you know, they'll pass, and, you know, perfectly fine. You know, you gotta, you know, if you, for some, this is how they make money. So, you know, you've got to, you know, the biggest part of that budget is for the actors, and then for the crew, getting, you know, a cameraman who, or a cinematographer who knows what they're doing, getting a sound editor, sound engineer. It's, you know, one thing just to hold a boom mic. It's another thing to be able to split up the audio, and so that it's all not just one big loud noise. And then special effects, you know, these things is a very special effects heavy movie. We need, and we want to have original entertaining creatures. You know, these things are great. You know, these are great, but these are only just part of it. And so, as you see on our poster and on all our different pages, we have these things with teeth. And trust me, it's going to be something. And on Wednesday, you're going to really see what kind of things they are.
As someone who is, when I've had funds to back campaigns such as yours, or some of the folks that I know in the community and had that funds to do it, I know some people might be skeptical to... there are some like me, it's like, hey, I know I'm backing, let's say, you, because I know you, I'm familiar with your work, I know you constantly put out the movies and the product, or David, same thing with David, he's always putting out good product, always putting out the movies. I haven't gotten burnt. Same thing went on the few occasions that I've backed Darkstone and John Johnson. I've been on his team. You know, I know these folks. I know they're constantly trying, you know, that circle. Trustworthy people doing it in the community. And I think a lot of folks, they might have that issue. Hey, why should I back? I don't know Matt, Key13. I don't know David. I don't know Darkstone. So how do I know I'm going to get burnt? I've got burnt in the past, so I'm not going to give my $5. And that's the whole other aspect, is I don't want to, I'm not saying me personally, it's like, hey, I'm going to share this out. I know Matt does good work. I know Dave does good work. But as soon as you announce on Facebook, I'm sure you've had the issue as well, As soon as I put out or share that, hey, I just gave Matt $5, $10, whatever, for his campaign. As soon as that post is on X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it, Instagram, Facebook, all of a sudden, I've gotten it. You know, say, hey, I see you are, you know, running an Indiegogo campaign. Do you need my help to promote it? I'm backing a campaign.
Right.
I'm not running it. But do you need help promoting it? No, I, dude, I just donated. Or I know recently, I'm just going to pick it up. For example, it's like, oh, I just got this product in. Let's do an unbagging of, you know, my pledge, the reward I got for backing Matt's product. Let's take that journey with me. And all of a sudden, I get the same things. Like, are you running a Kickstarter or Indiegogo? I could help you with that. I'm like, dude, I'm sharing what I've gotten. So, in a way, promoting that Matt is giving, you know, rewards, and he's following through on his campaign, which is, even though I'm a very tiny creator, it's still proof out there that yourself could use, saying, hey, look at this. We do send out our stuff. It's that issue on our end, and it's like, oh, I don't want, it's like, hey, as I get it, I'm sure Matt gets it, but still, we want you to help out the creator. You don't have to share it as much as Matt wants you to share that link out and help out. You did share that, where I'm just trying to raise his voice up to everybody. So,
yeah, it is a frustrating thing. And trust me, I get a billion of them. I had told one several times to stop messaging me. And I basically, I guess their supervisor, which I don't believe that that actually was, basically emailed me or messaged me and said that I was being rude to their representative. And I was like, get out of here. So, you know, I understand, you know, what you're talking about, because I've gotten it, excuse me, so many times. Okay. And it is incredibly frustrating. And, you know, if anybody's cold calling you to offer their services and they can't even use proper grammar, pass. But, you know, crowdfunding is a difficult thing. And, you know, unless you've got the right, you know, if you've got a social media manager, you know, or you're very good at managing social media, you don't need those kind of things. And most of those are scams anyways.
Right.
If they can't, like I said, if they can't even use proper punctuation in a sentence or capitalization, you're automatically suspect that it's some sort of Autobot, some sort of machine that's basically just sending out a million emails, and hopefully nobody gets caught.
I'll agree with you on that. On my side of the community, so to speak, it's always cold calls like, hey, do you want more followers or more X, Y, and Z? I'm like, and my response is, congratulations, you just won a special reward. That reward being, you're getting blocked. my aspect is that if I wanted help promoting what I need to, one thing is like, hey, I have you guys in my corner in a way. It's like, okay, what am I doing wrong? How can you guys help me? You know, give me fresh eyes on this. And if that does not work, or it's not working for me, and I've had the funds, I'm not searching, I'm not doing the guy that or gal or person that is cold calling me. I'm searching somebody out.
Right.
Or I'm going to you. I'm going to Matt Burns. I'm going to other people that have done it or might know people that are credible and reliable that I can trust that, yeah, they're going to quote me a number. I'm going to try to meet that number and they have that track record. I'm not going to do some weirdo that is, hey, I'm from Fiverr. Now, I've on my show with my intro for the folks who have listened, I have what I've nicknamed my voice of God, and I'm using for those listening, I'm using air quotes. The gentleman that you hear in my intro, on the audio side, outro, and the breaks and the bumpers and all that, he did do a side hustle with Fiverr, but he was a radio person when he was alive, and he did a lot of stuff for radio. And he offered like a Christmas present for anybody who wanted it in the podcasting community to do intros, bumpers, and so forth and so on to use. But he's like, hey, if you want me, I have an account on Fiverr. Yeah, he's somebody I would have trusted. And if I wanted more, and I would have went to him if he was still alive. And nothing against him. And the reason why I call him, folks at home, this is a little inside on my end. The reason why I called him my voice of God, even though he's passed away, is folks know that I'm also a fan of Coast to Coast AM. And they're the person that does their bumpers, their intro, they nicknamed their voice of God because he has that deep bass voice. I'm like, hey, why not? He's got deep, give him credit, raise him, put him up on that pedestal. Hey, why not? He's our voice of God. So he's that. To kind of move things along, how did you get into filmmaking and why?
Okay, well, there's quite a few different threads on this story. I will try to put them all together as best I can. I started off writing reviews for movies, for Japanese animation and Asian cinema. Then started going to conventions, started doing photography, and then I got interviewed by a show called Behind the Set, created by Rose Genevieve, and she needed some help doing some interviews on a film set. So I went with her. That film needed some help. I helped out. That kind of got my foot into the community. And then after a couple of years of helping out others, I and a couple of friends decided to create Key 13 Films. That was, we just celebrated our 4-year anniversary back in November. So that's the how. And then the why, well, when I was 7 years old, I wanted to be a novelist. But what the heck does a 7-year-old know about anything? It was a dream that I had, but I wasn't a very good writer. Dialogue was terrible, and then, life happened, joined the military, got married, had kids, so that dream kind of went to the wayside. And then when I started writing when I was writing my stories, I always saw it like a movie in my head. So when I started writing reviews, I watched a lot of movies. I watched not only Asian cinema, but American cinema, French cinema, from all over the world. And so I really kind of learned, and I got to study and break it down, and it rekindled those dreams. But instead of being a novelist, decided to just try my hand at screenplays. And I'd done some acting when I was younger, and I really loved it. But I've always in my heart been a writer. And so I wrote my first screenplay. Is our short film Hoodie, which was also the very first thing that we ever filmed. And my partner at the time, my business partner, he said that, man, you got actual good talent for writing dialogue. which, you know, up until that point, I thought that I had no talent in writing dialogue. But, you know, Hoodie showed me that I actually could. And so I started writing other things. And as a writer, one of the most important things that you can have is people that are going to give you honest and good feedback. They're not just going to say, oh, it's great, it's wonderful. You know, they're not just going to blow smoke up your ass. But you don't want somebody who says, oh, it sucks, and then gives you no way to fix it. Just says it sucks. Why does it suck? It just sucks. Okay, that doesn't help me any. So I was fortunate to have the right kind of people to give me that input, that they'll read a script and say, this is great and this is not so great. So, you know, with the success of Hoodie, and Hoodie won some awards for the short film, won some awards. And so then I started doing other stuff, and I was doing a show at the time, and that was, you know, well received. And so really just from the last 6 or so years, that my love of writing, my love of storytelling was rekindled. And now I'm at a point where I'm getting to actually see my ideas come to life. You know, we have Serious Profession, which will be coming out very soon. Anna Key, which we had a premiere back in April, very well received. We have Heavy Duty Man, which is also coming out. The Resident Evil documentary, which was not my, I didn't create the project. It was Brandon Salisbury who brought the project to me, but I saw what he was trying to do and was smart enough to say, yes, I want to be a part of this. So the why is basically I'm getting to do something that I always wanted to do, not necessarily in the way that I thought I was going to do it. I thought I was going to be writing books, you know, and selling books. But as it turns out, I'm writing screenplays and then helping getting them made. And, you know, and these things is just the latest of my ideas that are going to get made. And that's one of my favorite part. I if it was up to me, I would just write all day long and have other people make my stuff. But, you know, I don't have Sony. I don't have Paramount knocking down my door asking for my scripts. So I got to make it myself, or I got to give them over like a Heavy Duty Man. I came up with the idea and, you know, the concept and some of the dialogue, but Tom Tuohy just took the project and says, I'm going to run with this. And so I just gave that over to him. You know, Amanda Magan directed Anna Key, and, you know, it was tough to let that baby go and give it into the hands of another director, because I knew how I would do it, but it wasn't necessarily the way that it was supposed to be done. So Amanda did it the way that she felt, and it came out great. So, you know, it's a matter of just, I'm getting to do what I enjoy. I'm getting to write. I'm getting to see that vision come to life, whether I'm directing it or somebody else is directing it. And I've always been very happy with what's been done. So, you know, I got the 4 films coming out this year. We'll start working on these things. So I'm getting to do what I love, just like I said, not in quite the way that I thought I was going to do it.
Now, here's where we get into a little bit more of your personal opinion in regards to some things. Folks out there might not like his opinion or mine in regards to it. And that being, as an indie filmmaker, indie creator yourself, what are your thoughts? As you stated, you're not Paramount. You're not Paramount. You're not Sony. You're not Warner Brothers. with all of which, including, hay fever. There's still a lot of pollen in the air.
I'm right there.
But that seem to be on shaky ground right now with what they're doing with various outlets, what they're putting out, depending on who you talk to. But do you see or do you agree with a lot of folks like myself saying that, hey, the ground is shaky, the amount of original content is not being put out to everybody's satisfaction by the big players out there? Go with indie. Do you think the role of the indie creator is still, I wouldn't say viable, but the one of the better options out there for folks to enjoy the content or enjoy content?
You know, that's a very multi-layered question.
Try your best.
All right. So let's look at it from the 1,000-foot view, which is the big studios. Okay. I think that the way that the system is currently enacted, where if you're not represented, if you don't have an agent, if you're not assigned to this, if you haven't had, you know, a successful career in doing commercials or something like that, I think that system, that closed off system that they currently have, I think that's what's causing the dearth of original content, because people are just, the people at that level just aren't able to break outside. Anybody that is a talented writer has a hard, much harder time. They have to make an indie film. You know, if they're lucky, they'll get like Blumhouse or A24 to make their film. And then if it does well, then they got that foot in the door. So I think that this studio system, and even like Netflix or all those, they need to open up more. They need to let people like me and all the other filmmakers out there have an opportunity, where we're not having to shell out $500 for some website that might get us a connection. I think that if they opened up and let more of us in, that there would be more opportunities for some really great indie filmmakers to really show their stuff and create far more original content than either rehashing a previously used IP, or like, you know, like the Fall Guy that just came out. It's based off the TV show. They use the name Cold Saber, but it's totally different, and I'm okay with that. But the fact that, why did they have to use the Fall Guy? Why couldn't they use, you know, the Stuntman or, you know, something else? You know, why did it have to be taken from that? And that's because if you don't allow for original ideas, if you're always just looking to be safe, I think that's the other part of the issue with the big studios. Is they're playing it safe, which, understandable. When you've got millions and billions of dollars, you want to make sure you get your money back. But it's also creating kind of a lack of new and original content.
I don't mean to interrupt you, Matt, yeah. But I think that it, you're right. That is part of it, and it's also, I don't want to use it because it might water down the term for it. It also might be a form of gaslighting as well, which might be a strong term for it, meaning the studio is like, well, it's what the audience wants. It's what you as the audience wants, and the audience is pretty much going, yes, it's what we want. Or if you want to use a movie term, the idiocracy response. Bondo is what people need, and the people are going, yes, Bondo is what we need. Well, what if you need more than that? You know, that sort of aspect, and it's that secular, spherical mentality of it, and it's hard for, and again, it could be like what you're saying, to kind of lead on what you're saying, that close sphere. It's like, wait a minute, you as fans are raising up the aspect of these remakes, reboots, in name only stuff, yet you want that new content, that new stuff, but when someone, again in my case, like Keith, you know, Keith 13, or someone from Darkstone, or David Kerr, and all them are putting out stuff, or whomever on that indie circuit's putting out new stuff, you're putting them down. And yet they might be doing a lot of the same tropes in regards to what they put out, but it's still a more original idea than what you're giving the bigger studios to. But with the smaller studios, the independent folks, that movie, that $10, that $15, that $20 that you may give them, or $50 in their campaign, that money has more weight to it because you're supporting them, not the big studio.
Right. Well, you know, it is true that, you know, you got to give the audience what they want. And, you know, certainly I've learned that lesson myself with just even some of my own films, you know, a lot of people told me that I should have started off with horror films because they're very popular. And, you know, I like a good horror film. But we decided we didn't want to just do that. It's open for debate whether we made the right choice or the wrong choice, but it's the choice we made. We stuck with it. So our first film was Serious Profession, a crime drama. I don't apologize for it. I realize that the movie's probably not going to be as commercial as something like these things will be, but that's okay. With being an independent filmmaker and you're not bound by what the studio says, you can create whatever you want. And you know, that's the freedom of being an independent filmmaker. You could do anything that you want, provided your budget allows for it. You know, if you want to do a great space epic, but you only got $100, you know, it's you're going to be getting little models like this and putting them on string and dangling it around in front of a screen full of holes poked through with a light shining through it. You know, but
that's how my love of old school sci-fi got started. Watching it on back in the 80s, watching all that, call it schlock, call it garbage, call it the popcorn of the era, of watching it on like the daytime movie hosts similar to Elvira and all that, or Dr. Morgus, watching that stuff on independent stations where it was not little thin thread, black thread on a black background. It was rope tied around a fire extinguisher that somebody brought in from their vehicle. And granted, it's the independent stuff. It's how mines like got that in Toho. Folks, you know, for those who know Toho, you know. It's that enjoyment. It allowed. Yeah, you're right. That $100 is not going to go far. And to kind of tie in with what you said in regards to crowdfunding, that's why a lot of creators like yourself might say, hey, though we met our goal, though we met our, let's say, I'm going to lowball, let's say $10,000 goal, let's see if we get another $1,000. Let's see if we get another $5,000 or whatever. That way, the taxes and fees are covered. And plus, we get to give you a little bit more. The more we get, the better our product is going to be for you.
Right. And that's always what you're trying to do. And, you know, going back to the original question on original content, you know, indie filmmakers usually kind of fall into two camps. There are completely new ideas, and then there's ideas that have been done before. And there is no right or wrong way. You know, just because I may not like this kind of film because I feel it's derivative doesn't mean that it's not going to be a good film. It just means that it's not the kind of film I want to do. And so, again, that's where the freedom comes in, is any filmmakers can make whatever they want. And in many ways, which is different than the studio system, but also similar, by investing in those films through the crowdfunders, the audience is telling people what they want. You know, if they want this kind of film, they're going to put more money into this kind of film. If they have enjoyed the other films that that person has made, they're going to put more money into that film, into that latest film from that filmmaker. Because that's what they're giving what the audience wants, and the audience is saying, yes, I want it. And I think that's one of the best parts about it. It's also one of the most frustrating parts, because, you know, even all creators go through this, and I see this all the time, is they're all sitting there, and I'll admit it even happens to me sometimes, where I'm sitting there going, okay, why is this thing getting so much money? Why is this thing not getting a dime? You know, I think this is the better concept than this one, but apparently I'm in the minority, because people think this one is better than this one. And, you know, it's the free market. It's the way that it's always going to go. People are going to want to see things that they feel that is going to match what they're looking for. And if it doesn't mean that your idea is bad, doesn't mean that your idea isn't wanted. It just means that you may have to push a little bit harder to get people to see what you've done. And then that is its own reward in its own way, because if you can get people who at first were kind of ambivalent or on the fence, and then suddenly they're in, you know, and then you put it out and they're like, okay, you know what? I was wrong about this one. I'm going to help this guy out on the next one, because the next one I'm hoping is going to be just as good as this thing. And if you've done that, that's its own reward and its own victory. You know, I try to create original content. I try to take an idea, and I'm, you know, and there's only like 7 plots that are out there, and every story is a derivative of those 7 plots. But you know, I have friends, and I always say this, I'm never going to make a fan film. I like fan films. I've seen some fantastic fan films, but I don't ever want to make a fan film. And it's not because I think they're bad or I think that they're whatever. It's because that's just not what I want to do. I want to tell the stories I want to tell. I want to come up with original ideas. And if I were to ever do one, and that is the extremely rare case, I'm going to do one from something so obscure or something so that's, you know, known but not really known, like John Carpenter's Prince of Darkness. If I ever did a fan film, I'd do a Prince of Darkness fan film. You know, nobody's done a Prince of Darkness fan film, but I would do that. That is, so if I ever got that urge where I'm just like, you know what, forget it, I'm going to make a fan film, I'd make something along those lines, something that just would be so out of left field. And again, that's, you know, and if people would donate to that one, then, you know, obviously I'm giving, you know, people are more interested in that than maybe on another idea. So the key thing that, as far as being an independent filmmaker, and a big thing that I keep in mind and remind myself every day, is if you really want to tell the story, you're going to tell the story, and you're going to find a way to tell it in whatever way you can with whatever money you've got, you know. And, you know, everyone's heard the stories about the filmmaker that goes in the hawk, you know, they mortgage their house, they max out all their credit cards, they get their film made, and then it's called the Blair Witch Project, and boom, it's lightning in a bottle. And it is an amount of luck. You know, why does this movie, which has everything going for it, doesn't do well, but this movie had nothing going for it, and it's just completely gone gangbusters? Partially it's because of the audience, and partially it's just because the people who made it figured out what that lightning is and were able to capture it, and people saw it and liked it. It can, but sometimes it's just the luck of the draw. Sometimes you can make the best film in the world and nobody sees it. And as an independent filmmaker, it's frustrating when you think you've got this killer idea and it just is met with stifling indifference. But you can't let that stop you. You can't despair. You can't let it stop you. You told your story. They didn't like it. All right, find another story. See if they'll like that one. If they don't like that one, find another story and keep doing it until you find that story. And one of those ideas, one of those projects will hopefully at some point be that lightning in a bottle that gets you to where you need to be. And every crowdfunder you support, whether it's mine or it's somebody else's, and I'll post crowdfunders for other people that I know on my personal Facebook page, even though I'm trying to get people to donate to mine. I'm not going to be that guy that sits there and goes, well, if you're donating to him and you're not donating to me, then why would I help them? Well, because every independent filmmaker who makes a film just helps us grow and develop. And if we spend that time working together to try to, make this community bigger, better, and badder than it is, then we've really done something great here. And we've given opportunities to the next batch of filmmakers.
It's the aspect of the rising tide raises all ships.
Right.
And there could be also aspects of you helping out, you donating to one creator and they helping you out on yours, and therefore spreading the word, and the word does get folks. Trust me, I spoke to folks like Matt, like Dave, and a whole mess of other creators out there. Word does get out about other creators that are not that trusted or as sketchy. So sometimes you get to hear what goes on in the community, and I'm happy to support folks like Matt, like Dave. Hopefully we'll get Dave on at some point again, because I think he's been itching as well. But as a fan aspect, as Matt stated, it is our job to kind of vote with our wallets. And without us voting what we want and how we want it and who, where, meaning, yeah, when you go to see a movie such as the Mario Brothers movie or the current Planet of the Apes movie, yes, you're voting with your wallet in regards to that's what you want. But if you have that aspect of, oh, yeah, the new Lord of the Rings search for Smeagol, I don't want to see that. Yeah. You vote with your wallet, find out, do a little bit of digging, doing a little research, and find out who is a decent independent creator like Matt. That $10-$20 that you could be spending on a ticket to see a movie, you could be spending that $20 and handing it to a creator, which that extra $20 could go a long way to help someone out like Matt. And, folks out there, I will open the floor to hear Matt's opinion on it. I know there's folks like myself that pretty much live in basic, that have a very small place and live in a closet. You heard me say many times that I'm a supporter of both digital and physical media in regards to it, because physical lasts a long time. Digital also benefits folks like myself and many other fans in regards to, hey, I don't have room for physical, but digital is out there. But I want to hear Matt's take on digital versus physical. Matt, please take that away. I know it's a complicated. Right. I know it's a complicated answer as well. So feel free to chime in.
Well, you know, actually, for me, I am in favor of both. Having physical media is great. There is truly nothing like picking up a DVD or a Blu-ray, holding it in your hand. You know, the frustration of getting that stupid sticker, the tamper-proof sticker off, and it leaves residue. And, you know, but then you open it up, you get hit with the smell of newly unsealed DVD or Blu-ray freshness, which smells like chemicals. But, you know, you see it, you know, sometimes there's a nice, neat little booklet in there, or you get the steel box that, you know, it's got that satisfying clank when you open it up and you look at it. And then plus, when your internet goes down, physical media is always there for you. And sometimes there's things that you can't get a hold of on digital. It's only available on physical media. I collect laser discs. Okay, so I have a huge amount of physical media. You can actually see right over here, this thing right here, that's full of Asian cinema DVDs and Blu-rays. All right, you know, and that is the smallest part of my collection. I got a whole room behind this door over here that's just full of just a whole wall of anime DVDs, VHS tapes, and then downstairs I've got stacks of physical media. But as much as I love it, as much as I like holding it, as much as I like, you know, flopping it in the DVD player and hitting play and getting those things that I can't find on streaming, especially like Asian cinema back there, Asian cinema back there, which I can't find in America because they don't think anybody in America is going to want to watch it. Physical media is a great thing, but there gets us to a point, and you know, I have an ex-wife to prove it, that you run out of space, or the wife or spouse or significant other or whatever doesn't want all that crap in their house. So streaming in many ways is a great way because I can watch it anywhere I want. So I'm taking my lunch break. I can, you know, pop in my headphones, watch an episode of something, or watch, you know, some movie or something, provided, you know, it's not anything that's going to offend my coworker if they walk by. You know, or I can be, you know, my son is getting blood drawn, and I can pop in one of the Pink Panther movies, and he's sitting there, you know, just laughing and giggling while something he hates getting done is being done to him. So, you know, and, you know, I can watch it anywhere. I can watch it anytime. I can watch it on any device, my computer, my cell phone, my TV downstairs, you know, my TV upstairs. You know, plus you get a lot more content, you know, in some ways. Streaming is like the DVD stores of old. It's like Blockbuster. I have gone down many times down a rabbit hole where I pick a movie and then it says, you may also like this. And I'm like, oh, I like that movie. Mm-hmm. And I click it. And then you may also like, oh, I like that movie. And then click it. And then so on and so forth. Until next thing you know, I'm down 12 titles deep and I can still keep going. And I have to like stop myself and say, okay, you need to pick one of these damn movies up the line. So,
Matt, I hate to do this. I'm going to have to pause you right there, folks. I'm okay. Going to pause the recording. My little situation, my bladder's now this big, and I have this much. So I'm going to pause it real quick. After that, we'll continue with Matt's thought in regards to that, and I'll weigh in as well. So I'll be right back. Okay, sorry about that, folks, and thank you, Matt, for your patience in regards to that. And I agree with you. You do a lot of folks, like myself, in the original days of Netflix, going down that rabbit hole regards to streaming and, you know, even friends when I was during tight times financially, and they did allow password sharing in those days. I've had a lot of friends that saw my logic playing those movies on Netflix. Like, they'd see me watching documentaries about starting with, let's say, ocean life, then life on land, like wild animals on in Africa and so forth and so on, then moving up to wild and interesting rare birds, then going to space in our solar system. But somewhere in the middle of everything is Dora the Explorer or something along those lines. It's like, dude, I was following your logic from the deep sea to all the way up to you going into alien movies. But what's this, you know, Scooby-Doo and the Legend of the Five Evil Books or something? And right. Like, you know, or the aspect that I think the hardest with me and streaming and doing things digitally is the convoluted and complicated rights issues that a lot of the major studios may have with that, with those that IP or that particular movie. I can name a few offhand, one of which is, I could say Pump Up the Volume is one, Night of the Comet is another. There's always, the list goes on and on, because I could be scrolling through Tubi or Pluto TV, and I could see those movies streaming for free, and I'm wondering, it's like, I want to give you Vudu, what's going on? I want to give you my money. Why don't you have this? They're streaming it too. I want to give you my money, so if it leaves Tubi, I have it to watch. So it is that sort of thing. It's like, it's both wonderful and interesting thing. And plus, the physical aspect of things is seeing that connection with someone like yourself, getting that DVD and seeing, in a way, the end product, having that end product in your hands as a consumer, as a backer, as a, you know, a fan of that. And it's a weird and wonderful aspect, and I think you could, this also touches on what we might have talked about or what you've talked about in the past, is that sell, going to a convention, whether it be a horror convention or a pop culture convention, and trying to convince that ticket holder why your stuff matters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and again, you know, when I go to a convention, I'm usually there just to buy DVDs and Blu-rays, because more than likely they're not going to be anywhere available but on that physical media. They may not be able to get on Tubi, or, you know, and there's a million of these. I don't know what you'd call them, but millions of these little channels out there, you know, Roku channels or YouTube channels or whatever, that, you know, you have to kind of dig to find them. And I'll be honest, I've got such a busy life that I don't have time to go digging around, you know. Like, I just got introduced to Fossum not too long ago. Hadn't even heard of it until somebody I knew was in a movie that they were promoting. So I went to Fossum, and, you know, so when I go to a con, I like buying that physical media, because that may be the only chance that I get to see it. And, you know, and I have friends who buy physical media. So, you know, my friend Tom Tuohy, who directed Heavy Duty Man, he dropped off a couple of movies for me that I wanted to see. You know, so now I can actually watch them and not have to try to pay money to stream them, or, you know, one of them is not even available for streaming. Probably never will be available for streaming, but I can do it because I got physical media. So, you know, you could argue on both sides of that one. We could keep doing that all night, but I mean, I like them both. And I still collect, for me, if I'm getting a physical media something, it's either something that I truly, truly adore. Like, I bought the Blu-ray of Airwolf, all four seasons. I love Airwolf. Very big childhood memory for me. So I bought that physical copy. But I either, it's something I really love or something that I can't find streaming anywhere. Sometimes there are some stuff that I only found available on streaming or like the Internet Archive. I forget the actual name of it. There's this movie called, this horror film called Jenny, which is about this girl who was a snake, who when she was a little kid was like in a revivalist church and like did the thing with the snakes. And then she kind of turned her back on that. Well, then all the mean girls at this high school, at this private school, turn on her. So she starts using her snake communication ability to get revenge. I mean, most people have never seen this thing or heard of it, but I found it on the Internet Archive and was able to download it. And now I have a physical copy of it on a massive hard drive. It's a lot easier to store a crap ton of movies on something like this. You know, this is the size of a DVD, one DVD or two, you know, box set. But I've got hundreds of movies on this thing. Easy to do. Actually, in this case, I only have one movie on here, one of my movies. But the point still stands. I have, you know, sometimes you can only find it available digital online. But then there's another movie called The Hoax, which, not the Richard Gere movie, but a one from the 70s or early 80s with Frank Bonner, who most people know as Herb Tarlick from WKRP. And he's a ladies' man in this one. So he's actually a stud. Imagine that. You can't find it on DVD, can't find it streaming, you can't find it on the archive. I had to buy a friggin' VHS copy of this movie. But it's a movie that I loved and adored that I watched on the 2 a.m. movie on one of the television channels. So I have a spot. I love physical media, but if I'm getting it, it's either something I truly love, something that I can't find, or in the case of The Hoax, both, or this movie Shock Trauma. This is made for TV movie. One of the first syndicated made for TV movies. Can only find it on DVD. Can't find it streaming anywhere. I had to buy it. I bought it. I have it. I own it. I'm such a happy person. So I love it all. It all depends on what you do and if you've got a spouse who's okay with you keeping all that crap in their house or significant other or whatever. I don't have that, so I can put as much crap in my house as I want.
Okay, before we wrap things up, last and final topic, honestly, what advice would you give someone who has that same mentality as you, as probably a young lad of, I want to try to be a filmmaker out there? I know a lot of folks might say, use YouTube as a tool, but what are your thoughts?
Well, the first thing that I would say, if you want to be a filmmaker, is watch movies. Watch a lot of movies. And watch it one time for entertainment value. But then watch how they tell the story. Watch how the how the characters are. Can you get a sense of a character from the first minute they're introduced? Or are they one-dimensional? How did they do a shot? How did they film it? What is the message you're trying to do? The reason why I think I'm a better screenwriter now than if I had started it maybe when I was back in my novelist phase, is because writing reviews, you are forced well, not force, but you have to look at a movie beyond just the surface. What is the movie trying to tell you? What are the characters? Who are the characters? Are they fully fleshed out? Are they, or are they just there to be there? You know, once you've done that, once you've watched a lot of movies, then start studying. And you don't have to go to film school. There are, as you said, YouTube. There are books right behind me, actually right over here, are shelves full of books on filmmaking. Because even though I knew quite a bit, I knew I didn't know it all. And so I bought books and read those books. And then once I've watched a lot of movies, understood the mechanics of it, once I've studied books on it, what to do, how to film, how to do all that stuff. If you're going to be a screenwriter, you need to read scripts. You need to read a lot of scripts. You need to understand the rules. There are rules. Granted, they're not hard and fast rules, but there are basic rules. You got to know what a slug line is. You got to know what an action line is. When you're introducing a character, you know, you got to put it the first time they appear in all caps. You know, you need to know the mechanics of filmmaking. And if you're going to be a screenwriter, screenwriting, if you're going to be a cinematographer, cinematography, you need to know what an f-stop is. You need to know what, you know, the exposure triangle. You need to know how to frame. You need to know how to, you know, not just plunk down a camera on a tripod and say, boom, it's there. You need to be able to know what to do. What's a push-in? What's a pan? What's a zoom? What's a jump cut? You know, and that's even for like the editing and stuff. And then once you've done that, find a mentor. Find 10 mentors. Find as many mentors as you can get, real mentors, and have them show you how to do it. Let, you know, the spark is going to be there. And yeah, you can just jump into it with no knowledge whatsoever, but your film is more than likely going to implode because you're not going to have the mechanics, the pieces that you need to be able to keep it all together. And making a film is not just plunking the camera down, getting a bunch of people and say action and cut. That's not what making a movie is. Making a movie is creating the, you know, getting a screenplay, creating the characters, getting the right actors, having them in, getting the right people behind the camera who can give you the, you know, you see the vision in your head, they need to be able to put it there for you. They need to be able to record that sound for you to give it the best possible sound. They need to light it right, you know. And you may have to learn how to do all that stuff yourself. I did, you know. You know, if you've got people that you know that are going to be able to help you, that are going to be there for you, that are going to give you what you need. So the big suggestion is study, learn, get help from people who know what they're doing. And remember that every mistake you make is just one more opportunity to learn. And the final thing I will say, never, ever think you know it all. The minute you think that, you have already failed because you will never know it all. You will know a lot. You may know more than most. But if you ever think you know it all, you failed. You've got to keep learning. You got to be open to learning. You got to be open to criticism. You got to have a thick skin. You got to be ready to accept the fact that people may not like what you've done. And if the criticism is valid, you'll know when the criticism is valid. If it's valid, you're going to take it and you're going to make it better for the next one. If you don't, if it's not valid, then you can ignore it. And I had one guy on technical aspects. If he said something technical, I'd listen because he knew his stuff technically. creatively, he didn't know jack squat. And I would not listen. If he gave me creative notes, I knew full well what he was thinking was creative was pedestrian and bland. So I ignored that, but I listened to that. Not because I knew everything, but because I knew he was wrong. But when he was telling me, hey, your exposure's not right, he was right. And I listened. And I made sure that I do that. And you've got to be willing to do that. You've got to be willing to keep learning, to keep growing, to make mistakes. And no matter what, don't let it, everything, just don't let anything discourage you. You will get discouraged. You will have your moments. And I have them more times than I care to admit that I will sit there and I go, why am I wasting my time on this? Why am I doing all this stuff? And then I sit there and I look at something else, or I read a screenplay that I've written that I'm thinking about producing, or an idea comes in my head and I go, that's why I do it. And I do it for me. I don't do it. I try to do it for the audience. I want the audience to enjoy what I do. I want them to see what I've done. I want them to enjoy the experience the same way I've enjoyed the experience. But ultimately, you got to do what you feel is best for you and for the film, and just be ready to keep learning and understand that it may fall on deaf ears, so to speak. But if you do it for the right reasons, if you're doing it, you go into it just to make money, and you know, certainly you want to make money, but if that's your only goal, forget it. You can do it. I'm not saying that there aren't people who haven't done it, but for me, that's not my motivation. My motivation is to tell the stories I want to do, and hopefully, be able to tell the stories that and people like those stories, that I can keep telling more stories and keep learning and keep growing and keep getting better. And if you do that, you'll have a successful career, whether you make $1 million or you make $10,000. If you're doing what you love and you love doing it, there you go.
The fans will, if you do it right, the fans will follow you. They will support what you do. As Matt stated, surround yourself. Yes, you're going to need a few yes men, and you're going to need a few no men. But as Matt stated, the reason why I'm gesturing to my my left is because on my screen, Matt's on my left. But as Matt said, if those people are closer to the center, meaning they're giving you valid criticism, meaning valid stuff like, hey, don't do this. This is why I don't think you should be doing this. And valid reasons as to why. Listen to them and make sure these are the folks that are saying, that will tell you, even if you did it, dude, I told you it wasn't going to work. Dummy. That way the truth is out there and it's there, and they're not feeding your avoid the ones that are not feeding your ego, and avoid the ones that are toxic. Keep the ones that are keeping everything in check. I know it's tough to do. It's going to be tough out there. And to add to what Matt has stated, the reason why I brought YouTube, yes, that you have a lot of aspects of training aspects on YouTube. YouTube, the communities there can be toxic as well. But sometimes getting started, getting that rough cut out there, where there is, I want to try this. I've learned, I followed what Matt said. I read everything. I had a few mentors. I worked with someone like Matt. I did all the training. But I need to be on my own. Everybody has a phone in their pocket. Start simple. Work your way up. Do it. Post it on YouTube. That way, if it's a 5 or 10 minute short, that way you're getting something out there. That way you're getting your feet wet. You have that I'm trying that catalog, that that portfolio. That way you have a way of the fans finding you in the essence and telling you, hey, I like this style, I also like this style. That way you could fiddle with drama, fiddle with comedy, fiddle with horror, and you could figure out, you could test the waters in a way and put out the trailers and get more. So don't, and it'll also help you get that thick skin, because those fans as well are the ones that are going to roast you the hardest. They're the ones that are going to probably hate you the most. And yeah, you're going to hate it. And the ones that are going to stand by you are the ones that are going to like, hey, I saw your first film, it stunk, but I saw where you were coming from and I enjoyed it. And personal experience to tell Matt, I did that with Dave when I first spoke to him a few years ago. And he was like, wait a minute, you saw my slasher nurse? I went, yes. He said, that was my first film. I screwed up so royally. I was learning so much doing it. He said, man, that was hard. I'm like, dude, I saw the issues you had with it. I saw it, but I saw the potential there. I don't, yeah, they're wrong as a viewer, as a fan. Yes, there were problems to it. The audio, the lighting, but I saw the core was there. It was a diamond in the rough. And what happened? Several years later, he's currently, I think, in the editing phase of the remake of Slasher Nurse. And it hit, I don't want to toot his horn, epic levels of funding. And he got a wonderful cast in. And I think he's in the, again, editing phase now. And he's working on raising funds for another project. It's that, as a fan, and probably you as a filmmaker as well, seeing someone with humble beginnings say, hey, I learned so much, so I'm going to look back at my back catalog and like, I can do that better now. Let's see what we can do. So,
yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. You know, it's, you start off small, and that's what we did. We started off small, and we got bigger, and we grew, and we learned. And, you know, I learned a lot from every film that I ever made. And again, you know, if you've got the right people that are giving you good advice, good suggestions, good recommendations, there's no limit to where you can go. And, you know, yeah, Dave, you know, I have the utmost respect for every filmmaker that they say, yeah, I made a lot of mistakes on my first film, but I learned from them. And my next one's going to be better. And it is. And then my next one is better. And it is. And so on and so forth. Dave Care is a great example. There are a lot of great examples out there where you watch their first film and you're like, yikes, what the hell? And then the second film they do is better. And then the third film they do is better. And if they're willing to admit their mistakes, you've already won that half the battle right there, is because you know, you realize what you've done. I learned a lot on Serious Profession. That was my first feature film ever. I learned so much on that one, what to do, what not to do. And, you know, and so when Anna Key came along, you know, again, I learned what to do, what not to do. And, you know, Amanda was directing that one. I was not directing it, but I watched what Amanda had to go through, and I, you know, saw what she was dealing with. And so I learned, okay, I need to handle things that way, or I need to not handle things that way, or look at things this way, or look at things that way. So she taught me a lot. And then, so now that I've got these things, and, you know, again, that input is valuable. The original script for these things, my business partner at the time hated the characters. He didn't like anybody. None of the characters were people that he cared about. And you can't do that in a horror film. You got to have people you care about. So I had to rewrite it because his input was right. These people were not great people, but he gave me the tools that I needed, told me what was wrong with them. I fixed it. He said, you know, oh, these are much better people. I like these people. And that's because, you know, so now I keep that in mind that I got to make characters that you like in everything, even in a movie like Sexy Sorority Sisters of Death. Okay. Yeah. There's going to be a lot of women whose whole purpose is in there just to be killed. But at its core, you still got to have characters that you like and love. And I've taken that lesson and learned from it. And now I apply it all the time. And if you do that as a filmmaker, whatever aspect of filmmaking you make, whether it's writing, cinematography, directing, sound, whatever, you can do that, you're going to go far.
I'm going to share a story.
I'm going to do it. Folks, you could actually back me up if I'm wrong. You go into our archives and listen to the interview and actually call me out on it. But I'm going to relay the story to Matt before we go. And I interviewed Monique Dupree a few years ago and recently rehashed the interview a few weeks ago. So you're able to, folks at home, if you're watching this, head on over to our audio outlets to listen to that interview. But when I was talking to her in an interview, she was telling me how she wanted to direct a little bit. And at that time, I think she still is friends with John Johnson from Darkstone Entertainment. And he let her do the lead. She was saying that he pretty much stood back. And when she had trouble, that's when he let her do the directing and all that, but he was there to give her pointers, give her support. And when things got too difficult, yeah, I think she said he stepped up to be the lead, to be that mentor. Like, hold on, let me handle this. I know what you need to do right here. This is how you handle it. But for the most part, she did it herself. That's, again, as a point that Matt did said earlier, having that mentor, somebody with experience to kind of not so much hold your hand, but if you want to use learning to ride a bike reference, having somebody there to hold that seat for a little while that will let go, let you do it. But if you are starting to wobble, they'll grab a hold of that seat to help you along. So,
yeah. And you gotta, that's, you know, everybody's story is different, you know, and Amanda had to pull me aside because, and she says, look, Matt, you know, I know you've got your own way of doing things, but I need to do this my way. And she was absolutely right. And so once we had that conversation, I, you know, if she needed my help, I gave the help. If she didn't need my help, she did it on her own. And, you know, once we had that understanding, you know, she made a wonderful film. And, you know, as a director, and, you know, she also helped me. She was a co-writer on Anarchy. So, you know, not only is being a mentor, providing the help when they need it, it's also being smart enough, or, you know, sometimes you have to be told, because I'm a bit of a control freak, I admit this, that you got to be told, look, you know, I've got to do this my way. And that's what happened with Heavy Duty Man. Tom, when he says, look, I'm going to take on this project, but I got to do it my way. You know, I appreciate the support. I appreciate the idea. This is my film. I'm going to do it my way. And once I understood that, once he made that clear and Amanda made it clear, you know, I just step back and I say, look, you know, I'll help out where you need me. If you don't need my help, I'm just going to be right here in case you do. And that right there is just as good as being a mentor, as actually, you know, okay, you need to do this, you need to do that. And, you know, everybody's journey is going to be different. Everybody has to find their line in the sand, so to speak. They need to know when, okay, do I really want it? Do I need to say it? Do I need to say something? Or do I keep, keep my mouth shut? And everybody finds that point. And then once you cross that point, you got to stand up for yourself. And a good production partner will understand that, respect it, and follow their lead, especially if they are the lead. The director is in charge. Yeah, I was the producer and the writer, but the director is the one who's got to make the films, the one who's putting it all together. And so, you know, you got to sometimes... As hard as it was for me, because I am a control freak, I had to step back and let them do it and let them succeed or fail on their own. And, you know, they succeeded. So, you know, that was the right call. That was the right conversation to have with me. And now it's also helped me understand in the future, if I give a project over to somebody, I need to just give that project over. Let them run with it. Let them figure it out. Be available if they need me. But if they don't need me, okay.
Fine. Okay, on that note, one last thing before I close it out. Folks, this time I mean it. Matt, even though I'll be putting the links in the description, either depending on where you view this, folks, above or below this video, where can they find you?
Okay, well, the easiest way to find me is on www.key13film.com. Not Key13 Films, there's no S, key13film.com. We originally had a longer name, that's why I kind of kept it short. But in hindsight, I should have put an S on that. But anyways, www.key13film.com. You can find everything we've ever done. Our set of, as I said, we have Key 13, which are films like In a Key, and our short film One Last Toast that just came out, which are a little bit more heavier subject matter, or, one idea that I have called Following, which is going to be a kind of a psychological thriller. So very deep, very heavy. And then we also have our section for Cinephoto, which are our fun, more, I don't know, they'd be commercially, but more fun, like These Things, Heavy Duty Man, Sexy Sorority Sisters of Death, which is one possible future project. So you can find everything you need, all our social media links, link to our YouTube channel, link to our Instagram, everything you need to find us is there. You can also find us on Facebook on Key 13 Films. You can also find us on Cinephoto. We were originally doing movie pages for each of our movies, like Series, Profession, and A Key, but the upkeep on that is so much. I'm just consolidating and just keeping it on those two pages. But again, you can find everything that you need to. We also have Key 13 Photography Studio, which we also do video production there. A couple of shows that we've done are listed on there. A couple of short films have helped out on other films like Mark Burns, a couple of Mark Burns films. He used our studio for some green screen and some other location stuff. And of course we do photography, we do headshots and all that stuff. So everything you want, www.key13film.com, Key 13 Films on Facebook, Cinephoto on Facebook, Key 13 Photography Studio also on Facebook. And from there, you can get to everything else.
That being said, Matt, thank you for being on. And folks, thank you for watching this, if you made it this far. As always, if you're watching this on YouTube, please, if you like this video, hit that like button, hit that subscribe button to see any upcoming videos that we might release. If you're listening on the audio side, please hit that follow button on your favorite platform and leave a comment if you're able to. And if you are an upcoming filmmaker, I hope you learned something today, and we hope to see you on your journey into this world of filmmaking. So once again, That's Matt, depending on where you see his image. I'm the Reverend Godfather, a.k.a. the Matt Martinsburg Madman, and I'm out.
And now, the Long Coat Mafia Podcast.
It's a Long Coat Mafia Podcast!
You screaming up.
Welcome back. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Key 13 Films' Matt Anderson. Don't forget, all the links to find Key 13 Films will be in the description. But if you still have any questions, comments, or what have you, you can always send them our way using our email, which is longcoatmafia@gmail.com. Or if you're listening to us on a platform like Podbean or GoodPods, while you're hitting that heart button or giving us a 5-star rating, you can also leave that comment, that question, or what have you in that comment section, in that review section. It helps us, like that 5-star rating on GoodPods and that heart on Podbean, on the Podbean app. Or if you're listening to us via the Podbean site, you could leave us a comment. There's a way to do that. There's a way to like the episode. It helps us, even though Podbean and GoodPods and sites like Apple and Spotify will tell all us podcasters, all us creators, that there is no algorithm. Guess what? There is an algorithm. If the way to get to their front page is through likes, ratings, comments, and what have you, along with subscribing. So follow us on those platforms, because weeks like this, when we do a lot of interviews and we have stuff coming out on Fridays, all that stuff helps. It helps us grow. All the links to, if you don't like how Apple does things, you can, or you're switching from an Apple platform to an Android platform, the links will be in the description down below for the other platforms. So like Podbean and GoodPods and Spotify are in the description down below. So you're encouraged them. And plus, I know that there are platforms out there like Audible that we're on, such as Audible or Spotify or Amazon Prime, that you could hear us on these platforms. They're not free. You might not get us unless you have a subscription to those platforms. Podbean is free. GoodPods is free. There's a lot of other places that are free. You could follow us. If there's not a comment section or what have you, send us that email. We are also on a lot of social media platforms, the standards like Facebook, Instagram, X, and a whole lot more. So again, all those, all our links are in our description now. In our description, along with ways to help support the channel, help support a few other creators as well. So if you want to do it that way, but remember, giving us that follow, giving us that like, sharing our stuff helps us in a lot of ways. It helps us grow. It helps gain new listeners. So please check us out. Check out our social media. Let us know. Interact with us, because that helps us grow on Facebook. Facebook and Instagram and a lot of other social media platforms are becoming more and more pay to win. And there are ways to circumvent that. And you guys, you all out there, can help us by sharing us and everything else, including our new episode posts and the whatnot. So please do that. And what more can I say? We might have something posted up on Friday, so stay tuned for that, because there's a lot of drama that is continuing. So stick around for that. Hit that follow or subscribe button. You're going to want to do that. And on that note, once again, I am the Reverend Godfather, and
I'm a gamer. I'm wearing a bikini.
See you next time on the Long Coat Mafia.